So we're so glad you're here. Good morning, everybody. My name is Dan, and it's my privilege to serve as pastor here. And also, I get the privilege of delivering our main message every week. It's going to come from the Bible. Today, it's going to come from Luke chapter 24. Luke chapter 24. And you're going to discover that it is right after Jesus was crucified. Last weekend, of course, we talked about how Jesus was on the cross, and then this weekend, we're talking about Jesus' resurrection. And the main idea today is really the main idea of the main story of the meta-narrative that runs through all of Scripture, and it is this. His body was missing, and the angels told them Jesus is alive. So we see an explanation there of what happened at the resurrection. And by the way, if you're here in American culture and you're trying to figure out what St. Patrick's Day means, when you think about our holidays in America, when you think about what does our holidays mean, it would be so easy to grasp what St. Patrick's Day means, right? Like St. Patrick's Day obviously means drinking green beer and parading around on a Saturday, right? Obviously. But what do we know? We know that St. Patrick's Day is a Christian, St. Patrick is a Christian missionary and also a bishop in the country of Ireland. Strangely, has very little to do with what we do as a culture here in our country. And of course, if you're trying to figure out what Christmas means in our culture, you would very easily discern that Christmas is really a story, a life-changing story about Santa and his reindeer, and about receiving gifts and putting flammables above the fireplace, right? Obviously. But what do we know? We know that Christmas is primarily finds its origin in St. Nicholas. St. Nicholas received an inheritance and spent his inheritance on children who were suffering and needy and also were profoundly affected with poverty and sickness and suffering. So he gave what he had to them, and he was persecuted for doing it, a Christian missionary, St. Nicholas. So if you were to try to discern what Easter meant, you might end up at Target, like I did yesterday, and if you were trying to figure out what Easter meant and you were to learn about it at Target, you would have discovered it's about candy and Easter bunnies that lay eggs. And I want you to know that Reese's is now in the Easter candy game. Did you see this? They have eggs with Reese's Pieces, but they don't stand a chance. Good luck, Reese's, but it's not worth trying because forever and always we have the king of holiday or Easter candy, which, of course, is the Cadbury cream egg, right? Anybody choke one of those down yet this week? No? Yeah? A couple of them? I remember making my way through several every Easter season. Now I'm like, I'm just going to look at them and kind of worship them a little bit. But also, right next to the Cadbury cream eggs was this very, very, I think, disorienting and disturbing piece of candy. How many of you choke on the Peeps? For some reason, I don't know why, but these just give me this horrible gag reaction. It probably has to do with when I was a youth pastor, we used to play this game called Chubby Bunny, and you shove as many in your mouth as you can, and you try to say the word Happy Easter with a mouthful of, and ever since then, I've had this very visceral reaction to these marshmallows. Ew, right? Anybody like them? Who likes the Peeps? That's okay. That's all right. Lots of people like to be, wow. First service was like, there was just a few people, and we had them escorted out of here, by the way. So I am so happy to see wow, there was a lot of you. We're not escorting anybody out of here. If you like those Peeps, that's just fine. So obviously we know Easter's not about a bunny who lays eggs, but where do we go to find the central meaning of Easter? By the way, keep in mind that Easter's not necessarily a Christian holiday word. The word that we would use in the Christian faith is Resurrection Day. Even the word Easter is kind of like, what? What does that mean? Well, Resurrection Day is explained in the Scriptures, and believe it or not, somebody has to explain Resurrection Day to Jesus on the road to Emmaus. He is crucified, resurrected, and he reappears to a couple of disciples who are distraught. And they were talking and talking and talking about what had happened. And when Jesus appears to them, they don't recognize him. And he catches up to them and he says, what are you talking about? And they said, well, we're talking about all the things that happened. And he said, well, what happened? And they said, what happened? You must be the only person on the planet who doesn't know what happened these past 3 days. And Jesus says, tell me more. Tell me more. So in Luke 24, Luke documents, what did they say to Jesus? And they explained to Jesus his own resurrection and what Easter Sunday means in their own words, and Jesus plays along. Of course he does. But we're going to see here that this documentation that we discover is documented by Luke. And Luke is a doctor. Luke is a very, very devoted historian. And Luke is a disciple of Jesus, and he explains this story as he documents it. And do you know why Luke wrote his gospel? Here's why. He wrote the gospel for a specific reason, and here's what he says. He says, Theophilus, I'm writing this so that you can be certain. I'm documenting this so that you can be sure it's not a myth, it's not hearsay. What you're going to read in my gospel, the gospel of Luke, I have written so clearly, and I have affirmed it and confirmed it with everybody who was there, and I have interviewed so many people, and here's why. So that you can be certain when you hear about Jesus, it resonates with you, it's true, I can rely on it, it's certifiable, I can take confidence in it, I can rest in it, that what I'm reading is the truth, and that's how Luke describes what he documented. Well, these people say to Jesus, well, do you know what had happened? And Jesus, of course, says, tell me more about what happened, and they go on to explain these things. Here's what they say. Well, there's this things that happened to Jesus who was from Nazareth. You see, Jesus was a prophet. He did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher, both in the eyes of God and also in the eyes of man. But our leading priests, our religious leaders, they handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped he would be the Messiah, and he would bring us back to, he would rescue us and put us back in power politically. We thought this was the guy that's going to bring us back to power to rule and reign over the Romans and finally get back some of our prosperity and fame that God had given us long, long ago. And then they said this all happened 3 days ago. And what they go on to explain is this. Something dramatic happened to us. We had an experience with an empty tomb, and they document it and describe it to Jesus. And what we get in this is three specific keys to understanding the Easter story or the resurrection story. So here's three things that they describe to Jesus that Jesus brings to light in this conversation on the road to Emmaus, just 7 short miles in and around Jerusalem. Here's three keys to the Easter story. Now, how do you understand it? You start with this. Number one, hearing with your own ears, hearing an amazing report. It starts with an amazing report, and here's how it goes, verse 23. They said his body was missing. They said, when we got to the tomb, we have this amazing report, and we started to tell people about it. We went to the tomb this morning, and his body was missing. Then, in this amazing report, they said, then we saw angels, and angels see us, and angels are talking to us, and they tell us, well, of course, that the tomb is empty. His body is missing because he's not dead. He's alive. And we see the amazing report that is the heart and soul of the Christian faith. His body was missing, and the angels told them Jesus is alive. How many of you would have felt like, you know what, you had me at angels are talking to me. That's where you had me at. You don't need to tell me where the body is or Jesus is alive or anything. When I started to have interaction with an angel, that would have been amazing enough. But the angel tells them even more than that, which is Jesus isn't dead like you saw him die. He's in fact alive. So the main message of the Christian faith is literally an amazing report. Here at a gospel church, we call it good news. It is good news. The main message of the Christian faith is good news, which means it's not good advice. Well, what in the world does that mean? If you had good advice, it would mean somebody is telling you what you need to do. But good news is an announcement. It's a report of something that God has already done. It's not something that you go and do to help yourself live more uprightly or enhance your life or otherwise improve your life or upgrade your life. The main essence, the main message, the central message of the Christian faith is so obvious and so clear. It's an announcement, not about what you must do, but what about God has already done. He raised Jesus from the grave. And in that, you see what it is that makes this report so amazing. That the good news means there's forgiveness for your failure. The good news is an announcement that death doesn't win in the end. It's an announcement that Jesus, our hero, isn't dead, he's alive. And it's an announcement that all who believe and trust in Jesus, they don't have to die either. They die temporarily before ultimately he receives into his hands our spirits for those who believe. So how does Paul actually describes this amazing report in his letter to the church at Corinth. And here's what Paul says. Paul says that I passed on to you that which was most important, or some translations say first importance. And what had also been passed on to me, Christ died for our sins, just as the scripture said. He was buried, and he was raised from the dead on the third day, just as the scriptures said. So Jesus is so much more, according to Paul, so much more than a wise teacher. He's just not another religious guru that you seek, and he helps you live your life and make friends with God and otherwise find out ways to be prosperous and live a healthy life with all kinds of morals that you can pass on to your kids. He's literally the victorious conqueror over death who raised from the grave, who's going to return again and rule and reign over all things. You know what that is? That's amazing. It's an amazing report. I mean, I've been amazed watching the incredible storylines of the Avengers. Anybody else? The end game is coming up. And I already know the end game is going to be good, but you know what's amazing? The real life story that Jesus is going to return. He's going to bring with him those who have died ahead of us who have faith, and then he's going to receive those of us who are still alive who have faith, and we're going to rule and reign with him over all creation for all time. Wow. Someone should make a movie about that. A series of movies. Amazing report that he is going to, that we have to learn. Now the critics, okay, the critics believe, even in the culture here, the critics believe that Jesus's empty tomb was not an amazing report. What they believe is that empty tomb is just a myth. That it really isn't a report at all. It is just an unbelievable legend. And yet, historians and certainly apologists of the Christian faith, here's what they say. All they had to do was to provide a body, and this big, amazing report would have just been a report. If they would have just provided the enemies, the disciples, the critics, if anybody were able to say, well, I know what they're saying about this empty tomb, but here is a body. This is Jesus' body. Here he is. Do you know what happens? The Christian faith collapses. It's just a myth. It's just another religious story about a religious teacher and leader. The hype is over. The faith is dead. The hope is only a myth. But believers were convinced. And there's a reason why believers were convinced. Believers were convinced because Jesus was appearing to them two at a time, 11 at a time, 500 at a time. And then he appears to the Apostle Paul, who's persecuting the church. He's actually persecuting Christians harshly, violently. And Jesus appears to him, knocks him on his rear end. And then he calls him into a whole life of being an apostle. Paul, the greatest critic, now says, I believe Jesus is alive. I am convinced. This report is amazing, but it's not just amazing. This report is true, dramatically true. It has the power in its amazing truth. And Paul says, we are certainly, we're fools if we miss this. Our faith is powerless, and we are doomed to die forever if the resurrection isn't real. In a real report. Now try to grasp this if you can. Try to grasp this report. This report, if you accurately understand it, it's life-changing. It is transformational. It's not boring, church, preachy, if I close my eyes, I'm going to slip off and fall asleep droning on and on. It's amazing enough to capture your attention and transform your life. Pastor Jonathan kind of started us here with a call to worship and was so amped up about the power of the amazing report that I was disappointed that I was the main speaker today. Much like many of you are every Sunday, about halfway through. Because something transformative happens when this report is, when you're able to kind of grasp it and hold on to it and understand it, rightly understood, it's amazing. Number two, there's another key. Here's the second key. It's believing, not just hearing the amazing report, but believing the central story. It's one thing to hear something, it's a whole other thing to believe it. And believing it means that you recognize that the scriptures have predicted it. In fact, Jesus says it this way. You'll see this in the scripture text here. Then Jesus said, you find it so hard to believe all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory? And then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, and he explained that the scriptures are about him. Jesus, imagine this. He went through all the prophets and all the literature and all the different ways in which the Hebrews had access to the Old Testament scriptures, the law and everything, and he said, you see all that? That's all about me. That actually, when you read that, don't make the mistake of missing that it was clearly predicted in the Old Testament that I was going to come and that I was going to be crucified and ultimately I was going to raise from the grave. And he's referring to several prophecies. Let me give you three of them. It was prophesied that he would be born in the line of David. Was he born in the line of David? He absolutely was. No one disputes that. It was also prophesied he would be born in Bethlehem. He was born in Bethlehem. It was also prophesied vividly that Jesus would die before the city and before Jerusalem were destroyed, before the temple in Jerusalem were destroyed. There is no way that someone like Jesus or any human being can control what lineage he was born in, the place of his the place of his birth, and also the timing of his own crucifixion, his capital punishment and crucifixion. All the scriptures, Moses and all the prophets pertain to Jesus. Why? Because Jesus is the central focus of the entire Bible. And he opened their minds to help them understand how what they had been hoping for and waiting for and what all of the scriptures had been pointing to had arrived. And it was him. And he explained that in the Old Testament, through God's promises, through God's symbols, and also through the pictures of salvation, that he actually, all of that looks forward to the actual accomplishment of salvation. And that took place once for all in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. There is this great explanation of how important story is that was written by a man named Alasdair MacIntyre. And Alasdair MacIntyre says this, that you have to interpret things based on the story. And he gives this great example, and he says, imagine you were standing at a bus station, and a young man comes up to you, and he says, the name of the common wild duck is Histrionicus, Histrionicus, Histrionicus. Now, how many of you would at first think, I probably didn't get this right. There's no way he's talking to me. And also, there's no way a duck is named Histrionicus, Histrionicus, Histrionicus. That'd be one of a few things I'd be thinking. But imagine that. Here's what he says. If you're at a bus stop and a young man comes up, that you can kind of discern that a duck has a name and the name is kind of Latin or scientific, but you wouldn't know what that meant. And what he says is the only way to really understand what it means is to grasp the story. So in other words, if that young man had come from, let's say, the library, and someone asked him if he knew what the name of a wild common duck is, and then he looks it up at the library and then mistakenly believes that you were the person who asked him that question, that would explain what was happening. Also, if he was mentally ill, you'd be able to discern, I understand what's happening, he has a mental illness and he's trying to actually he's expressing himself to me. And then thirdly, it's quite possible that he's a foreign spy, and this is the code phrase, and he had a rendezvous set up, and he thought you were the spy. But either way, do you see how all three of those circumstances would explain what that statement means? And this is what we're learning, that Jesus, if you take him separately and apart from all the rest of the scriptures, you have a man who is very wise. He did powerful things. People said he died on the cross and then he was raised from the grave. So what? If you have an entire scripture, it helps you better understand. What does all that mean? It also helps you better understand what you're reading. How many of you ever come across the story of Abraham and Isaac when God says to Abraham, I want you to take your son's life, and ever thought, that's kind of harsh. Anybody think that? That's kind of harsh. What kind of God do we serve who says to Abraham, take your son's life? Well, here's what we learn, and Timothy Keller writes about this and using this explanation from MacIntyre. Here's what he says. The only way you can understand Abraham and Isaac and what God asked them to do is to understand the storyline of the Bible. In other words, God says to Abraham, I'm going to want you to take your son's life. And Abraham obediently packs up his son and he leaves. His son carries the wood up the hill. And his son eventually starts to ask questions. And one of his questions is, where's the ram that we're going to sacrifice? And what does God say? God will provide it, right? And then, sure enough, without fail, as Abraham is talking with God, he says, this is my only son whom I love. And this is some horrible, terrible circumstances, but I will obey you. And what do we learn? That not only does God provide the ram for the sacrifice, he accepts that sacrifice fully on his son's behalf, on Abraham's behalf. And then, just as it says according to the scriptures, he was relieved of this terrible, terrible, terrible sentence or this ask by God. And he received his son after sacrificing the lamb. God was satisfied. And do you know when all that happened? Do you know when he received his son? It was 3 days later after he agreed to take his own life. 3 days later, his son was delivered back to him. The no doubt, the same exact 3 days later that Jesus, the Son of God, whom he loved, his only son, was received back to the Father 3 days later. That's how you understand the Old Testament stories of how is this happening. And if you don't understand the stories in the Old Testament, how they point to Jesus, then you think David and Goliath is about facing the things that concern you the most and trying to knock them down, rather than seeing it as something far more, that God, in his single life and effort, slays the giant that none of us can slay, the giant of death and sin and the grave, and he does so without one single amount of effort from those who are looking on and those who are in Israel. So the Bible is written, of course, not like a novel. It's not simple plot line, not at all. It's got a bunch of individual stories and a lot of non-narrative material and literature and poetry and songs and so on. But God is the author of every part, and he tells one cohesive story, and we know and enjoy that there is an overarching story that reveals the world that he created. There's a basic plot line to the story that helps us understand even things like what we read in Genesis, that Isaac was delivered back to his father. So the Bible is not primarily about us. It is primarily about Jesus. He is the central story, and it is first and foremost about what he has done. It is not primarily about what you and I must do. And it helps us ask the right question. What that means is my central question about my faith is not do I behave, but the real central question is do I believe? Do I trust? Do I receive this? Do I accept this? Is this something that I believe as in a way that I receive it as true and I rest in the assurance? Or is it possible that I only agree with it? I understand it, I don't challenge it, I accept it. It's okay. I mean, I'm not going to certainly make an issue about it. So since the Bible is mainly about the arrival, the life, the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus, it's not about you and your life. It's not about discovering God's principles for enhancing your life, living more successfully, living more morally, living more prosperously. It's not about God's inspiring words to live by with a quote of the moment. And it's not primarily about God's promises to help us succeed. Instead, it is primarily about all that he has done for you to save you. It also means it cannot mainly be about how I behave. It cannot help you, it cannot fix you, and it cannot save you unless you believe this main central story. It's the only way that you can face or experience life transformation. Now, some of you have come across and maybe are on the keto diet. Good for you. Congratulations. When I hear about this keto diet and all that's entailed in it, here's the question I ask. Who is it that is so strong and so has so much self-discipline, has so much willpower that they can resist sugar and bread? Who is it? Who are these people? And I discover something that's true for anything that requires self-discipline. Everybody who is on the keto diet resisting donuts, sugar, and bread, these are people who believe that it works to stick to the diet. And they believe that it's successful, and the people who are facing or experiencing success with it have had the results they wanted. And when you believe something, you live something. When you believe something, you stick to something. When you believe something, it has the power to change your life to the point, how many of you would agree, to resist sugar and bread, you need a life-transforming experience. Anybody with me on that? You have to. You need something to change from the inside. You can't just be like, no thank you today for a few minutes. Never mind. You only live once. What I hope that you see is this. When you believe it, it has the power to transform your life. When you receive it and believe it, something changes. It has the power to transform your life. But it doesn't happen by agreeing with it. Key number three to understanding the Easter story. So in the Easter story, there's three keys. Number one, hearing the amazing report. Number two, believing that believing the central theme is true. And then lastly, recognizing Jesus, recognizing the living Jesus. This is where and how it happens. So here's what Jesus says. He says, as they sat down to eat, he's with his two disciples here. He took the bread and he blessed it. Then he broke it and then he gave it to them, and suddenly their eyes were opened. See, look at right at the moment that Jesus breaks bread, I wonder, did they recognize he's the one that fed the 5,000? Did they recognize he's the one that they were talking about who broke the bread and he blessed it and then passed it out to his disciples at the Last Supper? Either way, it was at that moment when that happened, when God opened their eyes, and then they recognized, okay, now this whole time, we've been talking to Jesus. This is amazing. But he's alive, and just like the angel said he is, and here he is sitting next to me. And by the way, the moment when you recognize somebody is a celebrity, it's pretty exciting. Anybody ever bump into someone at the airport or Destiny or the mall or what have you, and then you realize, okay, locally here we've got the Baldwins, so you can always stumble into the Baldwin family somewhere around town. But tons of celebrities are filming here in town, and certainly some sports athletes are in and around town. But when you meet them, airport, mall, wherever, restaurant, and even if you get your picture taken with them, when you walk away, would you admit to me that you're mostly the same? Your life doesn't change. You haven't had a transformational experience, of course, unless you're meeting Derek Jeter. Here's what I've noticed. Life changes forever if you've met Jeet or Tony Romo. Either one is the same. Anyway. But your life doesn't change by meeting somebody, even though you may have been shocked to see them, even though you may have been fascinated to see them, even though you might have been thrilled to see them, even though they're right here, it's really them, how is this possible? No one's life changes. But when God opens your eyes to recognize Jesus, your life changes. You never leave the same. You don't go away the same. Something turns upside down in your own heart, and when that happens, there's transformation, and it happens. Now keep this in mind, these disciples who Jesus is talking to, after they kind of finished at the end of the road, Jesus started to kind of leave them, and then they said, well, where are you going? Why don't you stay with us? And at first, they received him as a guest. They were courteous, they were polite, and at the very beginning, they received him as a very interesting guest who was talking and explaining and describing some things that were of interest to them. But even though at first he was only their guest, eventually, God did something profound to open their eyes, and they realized this is the one who was just executed. We were just talking about him to him. I would imagine they felt pretty foolish saying, you're the only guy who has no idea what had just happened. And turns out he is the guy to whom it had just happened. But they recognized Jesus finally, and it's so important for us to recognize that our Easter Sunday, it's not an American holiday. Our Easter Sunday that we enjoy together every year is not an Easter bunny story about eggs and candy. It's an astonishing recognition that Jesus is alive and he's defeated death. So what? When your eyes are opened by God, he's not your dead guy religious guru who's teaching you good stuff. He is the one who has conquered death. What does that mean? That means that even though it's time for us to die, when we trust Jesus, this pattern of life after death continues with us, for us, by God's grace. What it means is by his victory over death and the grave, it's imparted and imputed to us who believe, and this pattern continues, and then we are resurrected from the grave. How many of you love the idea that our death, when it's finally over, is only temporary? Because Jesus rose from the dead, he demonstrated that he's in control over all circumstances. He's not going to be submitted to death. So if you're a believer here today and you're already secure in your life after death eternity, keep this in mind. That same power that raised Christ from the dead is in you, and he's in control of over all things. And if he can control someone coming alive out of the grave, he can certainly control anything that you're facing. That's a resounding affirmation. People who don't really believe this story, don't really recognize Jesus to be who he says he is, aren't really settled on or confident in the scriptures, they believe that the meaning of life is to survive and do good while you're here, and that for the most part, all of us and everything is a general accident. And we have to see that what this means is by recognizing Jesus and receiving him to be the central story of the Bible, he becomes your central object of worship and joy. It doesn't come from anyone or anywhere else. If I were to tell you, you could go on, listen, we've linked in our church app if you need it, or you could just go home and as soon as you leave here today, not now, but you can click on Amazon and there's a 5-star product. It's been reviewed by thousands of people, 5 stars. There is no doubt about its validity, and you can go buy a product, and it guarantees that when you die, you're only temporarily dead. How many of you would think, well, first I want to check the price? Because if that's $39.99, I am not, that is way out of my price point. I'll put it on my wish list for Christmas, right? What would you be willing to pay for a product that guaranteed when you're dead, it's only temporary? Your life savings? I'd be willing to spend every dime that my wife has earned in her lifetime on this, honestly, and my kids. I know where their piggy banks are. Or would you be willing to pay more than your life savings? Would you be willing to pay your life? Your life. What does that mean? It doesn't mean you die. It means you're willing to give up your life in exchange for his life, and with it you get real life, and you get this hope, and you get this sustaining confidence that Jesus has overcome death and the grave and separation from the Father, and he promises it to you too. All who believe would experience this eternal life. Faith and belief, not behavior and performance. Faith and belief. If you're not very amazed about this report this morning, I want to encourage you to do something specific. It's not hard, it's pretty simple, and it's simply this: to review, just review this report. Just review it. To help you do that, we have a book we'd love to give to you. On your way out, you can grab them. They're on the wall out there. It's got a red sign in front of it. It's The Essential Jesus. And this will help you really kind of tune into and focus in on the specifics of this amazing report. And you can read the gospel of Jesus for yourself, by yourself. And it's my hope that that story comes alive to you and becomes an amazing report. You still may be foggy about the meaning of the Bible. The way you've read the Bible and understood the Bible is basically it's a separate, scattered moral stories on how to kind of live better and make God happier and how to be more well-behaved. And it's possible that you're still foggy about the meaning of the Bible. I would love for you to consider relearning the Bible. I've got this handout for you in the notes. If you had any notes when you came in, if not, we can certainly get you some or link to it somehow. But there's this great narrative written by Timothy Keller where he describes what's the central meaning of the scriptures. And it wouldn't take long at all to better understand how the whole Bible works together and how it's all narrated with the same story. Also, it's possible that from your past church experience, it's possible that for the most part, what you recognize about the Christian faith is some of your bad experiences. You've had a bad experience perhaps with a priest, a pastor, a church family, and when you think about the Christian faith, you don't necessarily think about Jesus. You recognize that it's all associated to heartache, being let down, disappointed, betrayed, or otherwise a painful experience. And what I want to ask you to consider this morning is, would you consider refocusing, not on your church experience, not on your past hurts, not on the failures and flaws of God's church leaders and church family, but instead refocusing on Jesus specifically? Do you know what happens when someone gets a grasp of who Jesus is? Something lights up on the inside. There's a fire that happens. And the way that it was described by the disciples, they said, didn't our hearts burn? When Jesus was talking and explaining all this stuff to, when we realized what was happening, didn't it all kind of feel like our hearts were burning inside of us? And when it comes to life for you, there's the sense of warmth of God's love when we understand that the scriptures tell us about Jesus. When we believe that Jesus is alive, then we can boldly express with certainty some confidence.